Peace, love, blessings, and honor. Welcome, everyone. I'm your co-host, Eyes Red.
And I'm your co-host, Reality Soldier.
And we are
Garvey's Ghost
in the Spectrum of Roots.
Boom.
Boy, yeah. We're gone full international.
International.
We're gonna Africa.
They are. They're on the beautiful continent, you know.
And I'm telling you something. We learned yesterday. Today we're straight into it.
Yep.
And what a star we have
today.
On our first day. We're just taking this thing too far.
Yeah, you know, well.
Introduce the brother, man.
Well, first and foremost, I'd like to say we're at the Roots Bar in Muizenberg, Cape Town,
yes.
South Africa.
Muizenberg.
Yeah? Muizenberg, yeah. Get it right, Pete. Muizenberg, you know. Can't we fresh on ya, you know what I mean? Yeah. And we're with the great Ras Judah. Yeah, who's going to enlighten us as to the culture and the history, you know, down here in Cape Town and the music and, you know, enlighten us with his knowledge of, you know, what's happening down
here.
And
we're at his spot here, and
yeah,
I tell you, it's a sight to behold. We've got some beautiful stuff.
Yeah, it's a beautiful bookshop and art shop, hand paintings. You can get DVDs, all kind of thing. It's a beautiful shop, arts and crafts.
In other words, it's the place to be when you're in Cape Town, baby.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yo, man.
So, Ras Judah, greetings and welcome.
Yo, man, respect me, brothers. Give thanks. Give thanks for the togetherness to the world, King.
Yes, I.
Yeah, man. We give thanks.
Yes, I.
We give thanks for the blessed introduction, King.
Yes,
you know, firstly, we must give thanks to the Most High.
Yes, King.
Christ in his kingly character reveal himself unto I and I, Haile Selassie, the King of Kings, conquering lion of the tribe of Judah, the light of the world and elect of God. And now we put Jah first and everything will be added unto I and I.
Yes, I.
Yeah,
yes,
man, we give thanks for the unity and the love. Garvey's Ghost, you know what I mean?
Yes, bro. Yes,
yeah, man, Jah live.
Real pleasure to be here, brother. Real
respect, brethren.
So first connection is a, let's say the first cut is the deepest.
Yeah.
This is a deep cut.
Wow. For real.
So, my brother.
Yeah, so we're going to start with where you was born. Yeah. You know, your family dynamics, your siblings, your mom, your dad, man. You know what I mean?
In other words, where you come from, how it go.
Yeah,
tell me. Yes, I'm born in Cape Town, South Africa, King.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, born in, say, Cape Town.
So you're still in your hometown?
Yeah, man, at our place, you know, I'm a home, King. Yeah, man, I'm born in the mother city, still the same way. The mother city is the mother of all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So my home and your home, you know.
Yes,
like our brother Bob say, my own, my head, man, Rastafari.
Yeah, man,
but we born Cape Town, see? Yeah, we born in a special place, King. We born just under Lion's Head, Cape Town.
Okay,
the mountain. Man. Yeah.
Lion's Head, Cape Town.
Yes, I.
So, yeah, man, my Earth Day, 21st of July, 1971, King. Yeah, man, so from the hospital in Cape Town, my mom and my papa take me home to a place called Bridgetown in the Cape Flats.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, man. So me as a youth, I'm born in the apartheid era.
Yes.
Seen? Yeah. So born in the 70s in the apartheid era. Born in Cape Town under Lion's Head and took home to a community called Bridgetown in the Cape Flats.
Same.
Yeah, man.
Wow. So what was early life like for you as a young? So you got siblings as well?
Yeah, man, we have siblings, King. We have siblings. We have a brother. We have a younger brother, two younger sisters.
Mm.
And then my dad from his second marriage, we have one sister, one brother.
So you're the eldest?
Yeah, man, I'm the eldest. My father's eldest son, yes, right. King, you know.
First lion, yeah, man. Lion head.
Yeah, man. My father, he the eldest son, the same way.
Okay.
Yeah, man. Right. So my father's eldest son, my king. So my early life living in apartheid South Africa as a youth. Basically, if you was a youth, you just deal with your family, you know, my king. You know, dealing with politics, none of those things.
Yeah.
None of those things. But what I remember when I reached standard 5. At the local school in Mitchell's Plain.
Mm.
Mitchell's Plain is where I grew up in the Cape Flats.
Mm.
I recall the year before me leaving to go to the high school, It was the starting of the 1980s uprising.
Oh, wow.
And the turmoil was starting, you know.
Okay.
And there was, it was raucous at the high schools, and we as youth playing on the field, soccer, cricket, whatever the season is, we were just interested in what's happening. All our teachers would say, like, yo, it's the kids at the school acting up, you know what I mean? But at that point, I had no idea of politics or race or all these things.
But you knew just, something was happening.
And we knew, we could feel something was happening, you know what I mean? Because the architecture of apartheid civilly, where we, you can maybe check it out, Mitchell's Plain, where we lived, is designed a certain way, and all this, we were segregated based on complexion also. You understand? So in our... In Cape Town, you had something called the Cape Coloured
Scene. Okay.
So we were classified according to apartheid as Cape Coloured.
Because of the complexion.
Yeah. Then you had something like Black African.
Okay.
And in Black African, you would have Xhosa tribe, Sotho tribe, Zulu tribe. You understand? Okay.
Yeah.
And then you would have white, where you would have the European tribes.
Scene.
But our people, so-called Cape Coloured, we were very peculiar. Because half of us could fit in the Black African side. And the other half can fit in. You know what I mean, King?
Where we kind of have them experiences in the UK. You know what I mean? I have that in my heart.
All of our families are like that. Because that would mean our family would be divided according. Could you imagine that?
But I'm going to share this with you. Because... I was fortunate enough to travel to the States, where I saw our people be living in the States, because apartheid was segregation and based on complexion also and those things, because they would have a test called the pencil test, where they would put a pencil through your hair to see the kink in your hair.
Oh, okay, right.
To see if you classify.
Yeah.
So there was families literally broken up, being on the white side, and families being on the black side.
Right.
You see, so that is kind of like the apartheid system. But in our family, we have lighter complexion and we have dark complexion, same way. But in South Africa, what they also did, they would like style a tribe. So the Xhosa people would just have to be together. And they would have a homeland. So you understand what I mean? Zulu would have a homeland where it would just be that tribe.
Bantustan.
Bantustan, it was called. They would just, but the minds, I would think, of the former government of these people, because they were social engineers and architects
of
also.
Course,
in their mind, they were keeping things pure, man.
Right.
Because those are just Sotho people.
Right.
Those are just Xhosa people.
That's right.
Those are, so you understand what I mean?
It sounds psychotic now. It really does.
It's a crazy experiment. You understand what I mean? And it was kind of misguided also from the scriptures also. Very much. From a religious perspective. You understand? Because the apartheid had church and state.
So did you have a situation where... you couldn't be friends with somebody because their complexion was different to yours?
Now, the situation is this. Mitchell's Plain, everyone looks like me.
Okay.
But at the same time, we have lighter and darker because it's part of our heritage and part of who we are. We are, our people are, I think, the most genetically blessed, for lack of another word. People on earth, we have serious genetics, you know what I mean?
Oh, in terms of differences.
Like
Africa,
like the whole world, you see, King. So from that perspective also, and we owe a lot of that to our African, Ethiopian, Alkabulan ancestor, Khoikhoi, San people. Some would say Hottentot and Bushman, and you see, King. So that is also an important part of our heritage. Other than that, Cape Town has been an international place for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Cape Town was founded before New York.
Yes, that's right.
there was vibes here. There was always been vibes here. People have been traveling around here for millennia.
Okay. And this is where the Atlantic Ocean and the Indian Ocean collide, right?
So yes. Yeah. And lots of people, they will say when they come to Cape Town, it feel like Europe.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe some architecture here, but I would say, not that I want to give Europe too much glory, I would say it's international. You understand what we're saying, King? That's the vibe, really.
Rewinding back a little bit still, like, what was the dynamic like growing up in your house from, like, with your family, your siblings,
family.
Obviously, you had the apartheid situation, but was it a playful thing? Like, did you have a lot of struggle? Like,
we grew up nice.
Same.
We personally, my experience growing up in Mitchells Plain, Cape Town, South Africa, in apartheid was nice.
Right, okay.
Wimbledon is on TV.
Same.
We playing tennis.
Oh,
okay.
Right.
In the road.
Right,
okay. See.
Cricket.
Cricket one.
Yeah.
We playing cricket in the road.
Same,
King.
Yes, right.
Roller skates coming in.
Okay.
We ganging up.
Same.
Roller skating, all of us.
Yeah.
Look, the economics in apartheid time and the economics now, and I'm sure it's not only in South Africa, the whole world feel it, like Mr. Marley say. Cost of living gets so high, rich and poor.
Start
to cry. Say, you know, so as a youth, the money had a bit of respectability, you know, could take your places. And so never mind, we were just amongst our own people, per se.
Right.
There was money, there was lights.
Mm.
You can jump on a bus, train is working, certain things.
And there's something to be said for you didn't really know any different. So as a young boy, you're going to find joy that young people find.
You feel me, King? I'm not looking to be on that side side.
Yeah.
But as I got older in my teens, where I was growing up was kind of like a hip place.
All right.
Mitchell's Plain.
Right.
But it was the experiment also that the apartheid government did, taking us further and further away from the mountain.
Okay.
Putting us in what you call the Cape Flats.
Okay.
So it's designed in a certain way. It's far from the city centers and all these things.
Right.
But they put a train line in for us to get to the cities because our parents must go work.
We have to work, of course.
You see, King? But they designed it a certain way with X amount of entries, X amount of exits and all these things.
Right.
Put it far away. Yeah. So if anything, worst case scenario, you need to drop a bomb on people.
Right.
We just need one bomb.
You know what I mean, King? So, because the apartheid is like in engineering also, civil engineering, social, and all those things.
Okay.
For the lie to go forward or for that system to.
Mm.
But not that I'm defending that system, but as a youth, we grew up nice. There was peace and love and unity and vibes and solidarity and, you know what I mean, King?
You always find goodness out of bad anyway.
Yeah.
And that's the remarkable resilience of poor people. Because it would almost be like, they say, if you got money, it buys you happiness. So it should follow that if you don't have money, you must be the unhappiest people on earth. Mm. Well, it's not necessarily like that.
It's untrue, Aya. It's untrue. And also the thing with the money the thing is like, I watched some Louis Armstrong documentary and the man said, I'm born like poor.
Mm.
But he got the hustle and he say he hustle now like, $5. He say he's never hungry in his life, bruh. He's poor, but he hustle $5. You know what? $5 in South Africa right now is times 20.
Yes.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's 100 rand now. Like, poor people here today, 2024.
Mm.
The man got no $5, King. Louis Armstrong was asking $5, and he say him nice, you understand?
Yeah.
He grew up in ghetto and all these things, you see, but him spirit right.
Mm.
Yeah.
But the whole system, coming back to what Mr. Marley said about the cost of living and the way they set the inflation up and all these things, you know? So we have our freedom today. When I was a youth, when I reached high school, like I was saying earlier, the uprising just started. I was in school for 2 weeks.
Okay.
And after that, the pure
mess. How old was you then?
I was 13 years old. Okay. Like, yeah, 12, 13, that kind of like the age you get into high school.
Mm.
So I was in school for 2 weeks. And after that is pure uprising, mass rally, education, political education, ANC, PAC, what's happening, segregation. Like you were saying, we thinking this is normal. Because in my community, we got parks, we got schools, we got, you understand, we're not too far from the beach. Mm-hmm. But now in high school, they're politicizing you to what's happening on those levels and all that, you understand? Because the struggle was to liberate the people and to get a oneness, I would say, to basically, because our struggle, we have something called the Freedom Charter, where we set out a certain course, and that Freedom Charter is based on the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. So that was kind of like the direct direction, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So now we're moving into that revolutionary time
Yeah, man.
Of the death knell was sounding for apartheid.
Yes.
And this monstrous experimentation on people of subjugating them and putting them in groups. It seemed like there was a preoccupation by Europeans to do with the color of people's skin. And yeah, it sort of got really sort of polarized in the apartheid system.
That is so interesting. Just saying that, like just to present day what's happening now today, presently with President Putin of Russia opening up some ancient faults.
You saw that, huh?
You know what I mean? And releasing like icons that you see. These are the oldest icons dating back 1,000 years of images of the Black Christ.
Mm. Yeah. Black Madonna.
And Black Madonna and Black Moses and just blackness melanated. And
like it was a surprise. Like, was that, who knew? Man, we knew.
No, we knew all along.
Yeah.
But it's just Mr. Putin kind of put the stamp on it now say, okay, that's it now. Mm-hmm. There's it. Because I've seen different documentaries of Mr. Putin, and in this one, there's always showing the black icons. Always. Mm. Always. It's just with him saying it now, people can come back to reality, basically. Mm. You understand what I mean? It's very powerful.
Yeah.
Growing up in Mitchell's Plain, I grew up in Tagbriklaan, and there was a painter in our street. And this painter, he painted an image of the Black Christ.
Right.
But the image of the Black Christ was Mandela.
Wow.
And the Romans were former presidents. The gods were former presidents of apartheid South Africa. Verwoed. And I'm not quite sure, but you guys can look it up.
It was
a heavy controversial painting. You understand?
So de Klerk and Botha and them guys.
And them guys, implicated, like in the crucifixion, you see.
Right, okay.
That's beautiful.
And at that same point in time, I think Archbishop Desmond Tutu said something like, what you going to do if Jesus comes to the beach?
Yeah, I remember him saying that.
Because the beaches are segregated. Black.
Where you're going to put him?
you know what I mean? So coming up to that blackness, you understand? To that, like, to that identity, man.
Yeah.
To a godly identity.
So what did it feel like then? What was the general feeling in both your family? You would have had cousins.
My family life, I guess, fond memories of my dad now. I remember my dad hooking me up a suitcase with books, encyclopedias, vinyls, all educational thing. Right. He was very progressive. He had long hair. He's from the hippie era.
Mm.
And he was the brethren who always brought the speaker.
All right.
He dropped the tune, you know what I mean?
Okay.
So
that one.
That's my fond memory of my dad, really, like, always pushing the importance of education. Mm. Now, that said, when I went to school, high school, is the beginning of the uprising now, the 80s uprising.
Right.
I was at school for 2 weeks. School was normal. We just received our books and everything, pens, all our stationery, and mass rally started, and
right.
things were happening. If it wasn't a mass rally here, it was a mass rally there. Lots of the older students, maybe they were being recruited also to get into the movement.
What was the feeling? Was it one of optimism? Was
No, for me. Imagine this is like someone throwing you in the deep side, bro. Right. I just explained to you guys earlier. A year before that, we were playing cricket on the field, knowing nothing. Yeah, you understand what I mean?
I need to work on my cover drive.
And then the next thing is like, Amandla.
Right,
You know what I mean? Right. Free our leaders.
Like, you have to put down the cricket bat and turn warrior, innit?
You know what I mean, King? So for me, it was like, whoa. You know? I followed the movement as much as I could and checked the vibes. You know what I mean? I remember at the end of that year, we boycotted writing the exams, also saying we're not going to write the exams now. Wow. You understand?
Okay.
So that I did that. And I told my dad that. I said, yo, you know, Dad, I decided I'm not going to write the exams because whole year we're doing mass rallies and they didn't learn anything and da da da. And I'm chanting the whole year, like, no to cut the education.
Same.
Free our leaders.
Same.
I don't want to be educated to work in a factory.
Yeah,
and
right.
You educated to be my boss and all this kind of things.
Revolutionary to us.
But that's what you learn in. And you know what I mean? These are the slogans.
But
like
you were shaped by that.
Yeah, each one, teach one. And that was the word. Like, that's the vibe. So I told my dad, look, Dad, I'm not going to write in this and that. And that's another moment. Because I remember in the 80s, our community were drinking alcohol hardcore. You know what I mean? Because alcohol's for the heart, people who feeling. Yeah. You know
what
I mean?
A lot of pain and suffering.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Lots of that. So he's sitting with his friends and I just overheard him saying how proud he was of me that I decided not to write. Because lots of the cats, they're there with you. And just, everyone's sitting in the desk, right? Because the exam easy, now you're going to get over easy. Because the system just wants to keep moving. You know what I mean? They want the blockage or so.
Right.
They want to keep moving.
Yeah.
But I decided on grounds of like, yo, I can't. I'm going to be a hypocrite to myself, Mosman. Because I remember in my community, we lived right next to a big dune, the highest point in our community.
Okay.
And in the heat of the struggle, one night I went up there and I have a view, a whole circle, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Panoramic view.
And every part of the Cape Flats was burning.
Wow.
Was burning. Shit. When you look there, the fire burning. Shit. You look there, the fire burning. You look there. Wow. The whole of fire was burning, and it's nighttime, it's live ammunition, a gunshot, that's in the struggle, our community, what we were going through here, you understand what I mean? So I couldn't just go write exams, it wouldn't be right.
It's a serious situation, isn't it?
You know what I mean? So that kind of mash up my education, you know what I mean?
Okay.
I mean, I'm going to tell the whole world now, but all is good, nothing hidden from child, you know, the good and the bad. See. So that mush up my whole schooling, King. See. So they eventually put me over to Standard 7. But I end up 3 years in Standard 7, homie. Okay. I got no feeling, no drive, no, understand what I mean, King? It's like, it's a joke, So I didn't apply myself until one day I'm looking around and I'm like, yo, Johnny, but your brother's my friend, not you.
Right.
You like his baby brother.
See.
So I left that.
Right.
I spoke to my dad, I said, maybe I can get into a college. You know what I mean? I went into Cape Town. This is late 80s. I got into a college, I did a course on business, just a little something, you know what I mean?
Sorry, a course on?
Business.
Business, right.
Yeah, management, stuff like, just a simple thing. And then after, all in between that, my family life wasn't so good. Because we went through a divorce, you know what I mean?
Okay.
So that compounded things.
Wow. And with the alcohol, the divorce.
That was tough,
man.
And that kind of mushed me up also, you understand what I mean? And this happens the same time we're getting into the struggle now. Mm. And then the struggle gets so hot that they decide to close the high schools.
Okay.
In the Western Cape.
Right.
Because
right.
the high schools is where everything's been organized.
Of course. Same. Student rebellion.
Yeah. Students, you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
So I recall one day going to school and a big notice there. School will be closed until further notice.
Wow.
That's all it said.
I remember those days and seeing on the TV and feeling so proud because I'd just come out of childhood myself. But to see that who was leading the fight and the revolution was being led by young people. Because it's almost like I'm fighting for my world.
Yeah,
you had your world and this is how you designed it.
Mm, yes.
And that was the same in like the Soweto prizes.
Yes,
it
was the youth scheme.
Yes.
And the youth were being organized on school through SRCs, student representative councils and all these things.
So let me ask you a question. So what was the sort of the musical kind of, was music inspiring? Where did you get your sources?
Okay, that's another question.
I mean, so you're tapping into roots music and revolution
music. So the music for me, what I would say is they say you listen to your parents' music, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So okay, but there's a special moment for me with the music where my dad literally gave me a mixtape once.
See?
In the apartheid
time. What did he
listen
to? What did...
No, I'm first going to explain this
mixtape
the effect it had on me. Because when he gave it to me, it's what he said also.
Ah,
right.
You know, so he gave me the tape and he said, yo, you have to be careful. But this thing is bad, you know. You know what? So there's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Bad.
Dynamite. Mm.
Yeah. Mm. And like, yo, be careful where you're sitting. And all that kind of thing. Yo. So what's on that? On that tape was the biggest tune for me was Odyssey, Zipping Up My Boots.
Right.
Zipping Up My Boots.
Yeah,
that was the tune.
Roots,
not talking about no roots in no land.
Mm. Yeah.
Talking about the roots in the man.
Of course.
We got the tune. You understand?
See? Right. See.
So that was the tune, and with my dad giving it to me with that message,
right.
I think that connect me into for that music is like a messenger, a militancy kind of in music for me.
Yeah.
No, okay, the love story and all that is all there, but I was always, after that, I'm always looking for that vibe.
Identity.
That pushing vibe. Yeah. So I remember when Shabba mashed up the place. Okay, reggae, Bob Marley and the Wailers. I was a youth. Buffalo Soldier was all over the charts. Same time, Bobby Brown had Candy Girl.
Mm, okay.
So the DJ play a Buffalo Soul, Candy Girl.
Same.
First a Buffalo.
Then
every day, you understand, kid? And then on the TV, you got the UB40s and all these things, you know?
Right.
Yes, but as a youth, we would go to the discotheques.
Okay.
And we would have, the house music was very big here.
Okay.
Now the house music was coming from Detroit.
Yes.
Right.
Early. J.M. Silk and Jackie Buddy, Jack. All that kind of house vibes, you understand?
See.
And then our parents actually, they had something called Lang Arm. It was like band music.
Okay.
The old band vibe and the dude would dance and, you know what I mean?
Mm.
But out of young, my generation, I'm coming in the 80s. And then the hip hop scene come here also.
Right.
So the Public Enemy and but before that we had mixed genres.
Right.
Everything would come together. We'd all come together.
Right.
And we'd play all different kinds of tunes.
Right.
But then after that things kinda like
branch
got
off.
More specialized.
Scene.
But the reggae scene was always with the punks.
Right.
And with the rebels, reggae was the rebel music.
Yeah.
Right.
And reggae music was the music that got all the people together in apartheid.
Yeah.
Right.
Black, white, brown, everyone, it give you the strength. You understand what I mean? Mm. Yeah. So my introduction to the reggae seriously now was by an elder who lives around the corner from me. Now, going through the divorce of my family and being mashed up inside as a youth and all that, like Marley say, I'm hurting inside, you know what I mean? Yeah. I'm actually born up, raised in the England church, the right. Anglican church, you know what I mean? Right. Christ the Redeemer. So we go to the church and baptize in church, receive communion, get everything in church and all that. But when I'm going through all the pain now of the divorce and all this hurting inside, I'm always seeking for the Most High, man.
Yes.
Crying out to the Most High, like internally.
Right. So, you know? In saying that, when was your introduction into Rastafari?
This is in the 90s, King.
Right.
Like just before liberation, just before elections.
Okay. And was there like was Rastafari common around them apartheid times at all? No.
No. I remember the first Rastafari I saw. You know, full camo boots, everything.
See.
But I thought that was strange because it was apartheid time. You don't walk around like that now. You understand what I mean?
See.
And yeah, I didn't understand. I was like, yo, this cat crazy. And then the next thing I heard about Rasta is, but that thing blew my mind because they said Rasta knows the Bible from Genesis to Revelation and from Revelation back to Genesis. But then they flip something else in there and he smokes a carrier bag of weed. So that the mind is like, yo, weed, drugs, illegal, bad, Bible, good. Back in the 80s or in the 90s, if you knew the old Bible, Genesis, that's like heavy because normally the Bible is just the man there on the pulpit.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean, King? And him alone. So I like respect that, like, yo.
Yeah.
Respect, you know what I mean, King?
Yeah, yeah,
of course. Yeah. So that was something kind of blow my mind, but I really link up with Rastafari when I start smoke cannabis.
Right.
Before cannabis, like I say, most of the people in the 80s, lots of our community were using alcohol excessively.
Right.
Right.
Myself also.
Mm-hmm.
So I started smoking cannabis. But then what would happen is I would literally have a Jekyll and Hyde experience inside of my body. Because I would first be drunk, you understand? Yeah. And I would, and so I came to a point. Yeah, it is a clash and not a nice clash, you know what I mean, King? So it came to a point where I decided I have to choose. Yes, I'm like, yo, I've been with this alcohol for so long. It's just run away. It's for the pain. It's all this shit. I was thinking like this already within my, you know what I mean? Mm. And I check, I want to go with the weed. Now I'm just smoke more weed. You understand?
Right.
So one day I end up in my community. Two of my friends come over. They still drinking. I'm not like enforcing my newfound on them. You know what I mean? I say, I've got one beer, let them sit, they drink in the beer. I say, look, I'm just gonna get me a spliff. I ended up walking for 2 hours, walking the community flat, east, west, north, south. Someone directed me to the Rastaman, you know? And just prior to that, I was having these heavy visions in myself, man. I was like really hurting, you know what I mean? A lot of pain. So I was, something happened to me when I was smoking. I had this experience. I don't know if I'm just sharing. I mean, shit, I'm sharing this with everyone now. I had this experience where within myself I was traveling. Within my mind, within my being.
Right.
I was like someone in a vehicle, in like a spaceship. And I was like in space, in the heavens. And I, on my radio, what I was transmitting is, Jesus, where are you? I know you're real.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then I meet Rasta man.
Insane.
Seeking.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Rasta man tell me, he's surprised because I smoke weed straight. No cigarettes. Everyone was smoking cigarettes.
Right.
It was rare back in the days. So he just connect with me. We used to smoke with a cigarette, but because in our squad, we had an athlete, a surfer, top surfer, and he didn't smoke, you understand? So he got us on to smoking the weed clean. He said, yo, doozy, we're going to smoke weed, we smoke weed, we smoke our cigarettes afterwards. So we followed that. So when I met the Rasta, he was like impressed by that because now he's got someone to smoke with. And he takes out the scripture, Revelation 5, mm-hmm. 5, and mm-hmm. that was it. That's it. Mm-hmm. Revelation 5, see. 5.
See.
That was it. Do you know what I mean? Boom. Mm-hmm.
So you've had your introduction into Rastafari. How does sound system and that whole culture in Cape Town and for you, how does that, you know, come into the picture now?
Okay, so Rastafari, I accept Rastafari as my Lord and my Savior, Christ in his kingly character. So from that point now, the music is integral in my growth. Because mm-hmm. I'm always seeking the music.
Yes.
I would go to the elders. I would borrow the tapes, a mixtape.
Music is like your library, it's like your newspaper, it's like your news antenna.
Yeah, man. So now with Rastafari and the connection of the music earlier with my dad, the music as a liberating force. You understand what I mean?
You saw the power in it.
Anti-establishment, mm-hmm. fighting the system. And
yes.
So now in the Rasta, reggae.
Right.
Starting to get introduced to Steel Pulse.
Okay.
To Aswad, Prince Farai.
Yes,
the heavyweight musics and
message
music. And I'm always going out seeking the music by the elders and that. Up until a point I get a job now at a music store called Musica.
Nice.
This is in the 90s. Now I've got the catalogue book.
Right.
So what are they selling up? Records?
Vinyl?
We shift in from vinyl era into CD.
Right.
You see? So I've got access to music now. Bob, Peter, Bunny, yes. Culture, Eric Donaldson, Stable Diet. Do you understand? And all that music. But now is a CD thing coming up also. A new artist that is coming up in the 90s. Now I start investing all my wages in reggae music.
Okay.
I would import a CD, Garnet Silk.
Yes.
I would import a CD, Black Woman and Child, Sizzla Kalonji, or Luciano Messenger. Yes, sir. You understand? So at that time, I was actually, the way just through the mystic, I was put in the front really because all the data before me and the sound man, they were on the vinyl.
Right.
So I come in now with the CD.
What was the big sound at the time? What was the name of the big sound system?
Okay. You see, the way the thing was set up here is not like that, my kid.
Right.
It's different. The big name at the time is a good friend of Dawid Menelik also, is the elder called Ras Jeff.
Okay.
Ras Jeff.
Okay.
Right.
So Ras Jeff used to play in Guguletu.
Right.
He's in the township.
Yes. Okay.
You understand? So that's where the music, we had to go to the township to listen to music.
Like the ghetto kind of thing.
Yeah. You see, we live in ghetto also, so-called colored.
Right.
But it's
so it's a different township.
It's not zinc fence.
Right.
It's more zinc fence or,
right.
But Guguletu's ghetto also.
Right.
You understand what I mean? But like Khayelitsha will be zinc fence jungle. You see? So we have the elders there. You have one location, not many.
Right.
So everyone would rally there. Because the way we know the reggae is in the 80s and like that, is more militant. The music.
The message,
the apartheid.
Not surprising,
and,
yeah.
You see, and a lot, the whole heap, just Rasta man.
Yes,
it's not like everyone's coming and my cousins and everyone is just, it's different.
It wasn't a party vibe, really.
It wasn't a party vibe. Because the way the elders tell me, when you go there as a Rastaman, you go to dance, is like you go in there to be charged by the music. Get a vibe, see you through your week.
Yeah.
You come again, you come in strong.
We had that as well as young black Brits growing up in the UK. But we had Jashaka. And Shaka was like that was where you went for your church call vibration, energizing and so it's the same thing.
So we the same thing. And now when I come into Rasta first, that time we learn of 12 tribes of Israel.
Yes.
That's why I'm still called Ras Judah, because we taught that. So we come, we get a new name per se, like you understand. So according, you know, the 12 tribes. So that is the first thing. But on the musical term, now I'm spending all my wages on music.
So you got a collection.
So I'm building my CD collection. Now, what I would do, I would record the music and put on tape. And I would make a cover. Just a cover. Because you must remember, no one had the music. And I would jump on the trains and I would go to all the township. I would go all the township. And I would sell tapes there out of two shoe box. Sizzler, Capleton, Luciano. You know what I mean? And then I'm pushing the new music also. But at the same time, I'm getting my reggae education.
Yeah.
From the elder them.
But you come in like a real Jehovah Witness.
Something like that, King, through the music.
Yes.
But then, to tell you the truth, the biggest customer is the barber man. The barber man was the biggest customer because really? They always have sound system.
Right.
They have the speakers set up and they're playing the music. And I went to go learn about the reggae by them. Because that the man tell me, Sugar Manor.
Yes.
Mm. You understand?
Yeah.
That's the man say, this artist, that artist. And I must write down.
Okay. Dennis Brown. Leroy Seabless. Yep.
You see, King, when I'm at work, I open the catalog book. And I must look.
Right. So you became a student of the music.
Yeah. Something like that, King. But it just naturally happened like that. You understand? Mm-hmm. And then I start getting the music and then I start listening more and that's how the thing grew.
So what about your sound? What happened to your sound?
Okay. So we had something called the root sound. So we styled our sound on what you do in England to build our own thing. And we didn't just get to that, but we did the research. We were very much inspired of the movement.
Right.
You understand?
So not on such a big scale then?
We're not like that, King. I mean, let's just say we did a lot with a little.
Right.
You know what I mean, King? So we would paint our speakers, we'd have our scoops, and we got our thing nice. Nice amplifier, add some CDs, mix up the thing, play the new thing. Nice mix, and not like you guys are on the next level where everything is bald.
And the siren.
But we put some money in a good mixer, a nice Roland mixer, had some relay, delays, and all
that. Where were you playing this
time? Echoes. What we would do is we would be in our communities.
Right.
We were in a community called Parkwood. Okay. Every Saturday, place mashup King, all roads lead to Parkwood.
Would this be indoors or outdoors?
In a hall that we, you know? Because now I'm coming in the 90s. Things are freeing up more now, like in the 80s. Late 80s, because me as a youth, we had to get on a train, go into the black townships.
Right. Yes.
And just being in the black township, you were target because you stick out.
Right.
You know what I mean, King? So, but that's, we had to go through all that, you see? So now we set up the first sound in Marcus Garvey, the Rastafari camp. We were the first sound to play there, root sound.
And the sound was called what them time there?
Root Sound.
Root Sound, okay.
Root Sound International.
Okay.
That's what we dubbed it, you see, King? Yes. So we were doing that. And then from that, this is our business now. We were dealing with vinyls. We were importing vinyl and CD as well at one point, and seven single from America, Ernie B's and that. So at that point, there were more DJs coming up now. Okay. So we provided them also.
Right.
And you know what I mean, King?
Mm.
So most of the DJs would come to our store.
Right.
To buy CDs, buy vinyls.
Okay.
And so we were kind of like part of growing the music in
you
that
were like
sense.
The farmers are flinging seed on the side.
So we were part of that also, you know, King?
Good.
Yeah.
Did you have anyone come down from like the UK? Sound man or anything like that come and bless the place. Artists, what about artists like?
Yeah, man, King, not personally, but we worked with Johnny B. We remember when Johnny B from England came down.
Okay.
Yeah? We worked with him. But at that point in time, we had the massive, you understand what I mean?
Right.
We had the following.
Right.
So we were directed the following. So we started working with Johnny B.
Okay.
And we would always boost his club. We would play at his club and so okay. and do help the thing.
Yes.
And just because of the one love, you know.
Right.
Now the music, literally for me, you say like a Jehovah's Witness. The first time I listened Garnet Silk tune, the tears literally.
Yeah, like,
I literally I had to. I was at work, you know. I'm cleaning CDs and stuff. Why be? And the man singing, what tune is singing? Let my people go, and you know what I mean? And I'm there in tears because I'm feeling this music so heavy and
right.
and just like, yo. So the music touched me like that, King. So when I played the music, it was basically me sharing what I found with other people.
Yes.
And it just grew and grew and things grow. And it's just a blessing. It's nothing that was like predetermined or premeditated. It was just a vibe.
Just organic.
Yeah, because yes, the times we were in the 90s was very much like that in South Africa.
Okay.
It was like a golden era.
Yeah, it would have been.
You know what I mean? Freedom, Mandela's our president. Yes. We got the best constitution in the world. Yes. Like, the sky's the limit, like, yeah. you know.
Well, that's what I was trying to get a sense of, that optimism post-apartheid.
Because yeah.
The suffering and the sheer frustration just brought the people together. And it's almost like you wanted it to just go on another step now.
Yeah. You see, let's just say we had very high expectations, man. And I think there was nothing wrong with those expectations.
Mm.
Because I think based on the Freedom Charter and on the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights.
You had a right
was
to be.
Like, yeah, I understand what I mean.
Of course.
It wasn't a privilege, basically. It was our rights.
Yes.
Now, at that point in time, me being Rasta and stepping into the Rasta consciousness and the Rasta movement, and I remember ordering me Marcus Garvey's Philosophy and Opinions and reading that. And Marcus Garvey's an inspiration for this business, for okay. self-reliance
yes.
and... You know what I mean? Because that's what he stands for.
Yep.
For work, hard work.
Yes, sir.
You know what I mean?
That's what it is.
So that was another factor of Roots, because the original name of the shop is Roots Incorporated. As you can see, I've got some jugs and stuff here
right.
too. Come straight out of England. You know what I mean? Look, I invested in this jugs, King. It's not like they're selling like hotcakes.
Right.
But I invest in the thing.
Right. yeah.
You know what I mean, King?
Yeah.
And because...
Yes,
it's what we do, my King,
yeah.
still. It's the real thing.
Yes, sir.
So, the shop also, we were distributing books, clothing, making our own clothing, running sounds, opportunities for the artists to get on the microphone. And our sound, I mean, we're not like a big world sound like that, but the local youth, they were on
yes.
our sound. We have some artists now like Black Dillinger, Crosby, they're on a level in their levels, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's just part of the One Love movement, really,
right.
what we were doing, you know what I mean? Yeah, so the reggae music, we take the reggae music as the gospel of Rastafari.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's our initial seed. In time, we learn about music.
Yeah.
More lovers rock, rock steady, you know what I mean? Music Bob was listening to, but we start out fundamentally Rastafari and spread this truth that we found that His Majesty's Jesus Christ return. We just thought that's like very important
right.
for everyone to know this. You know what
yes,
I mean? Yeah. So there was that urgency. And also of the time in the 90s, New South Africa, there was that optimism.
Yes, sir.
And we acted within that freedom. You understand that we perceived was guaranteed in that constitution
yeah.
already, no matter we were not there yet.
Yeah.
You understand?
But I think it's fair to say that your optimism as native South Africans, because we were watching what was happening here from the early 70s, as soon as we
yeah.
realized as youths, so hold on, there's a place where people are judged according to their skin color and not the content of their character,
yeah.
and it was being subjugated. As soon as we started hearing about the narrative of South Africa, that reflected all of us. So when we saw what was going on, how many artists sing song about South Africa as well? And Jimmy Cliff, Peter Tosh, everybody, you know what I mean?
Name it, yeah.
So your experience is like our experience. Like we're I want my cousin to do well and Wagwan. And we were just as happy that same day when Nelson was freed and he made that walk and Winnie was there. Yeah. We all experienced, we heard about the way they were kind of on Winnie one way and lording up Nelson the other way. And it was like the same old confusion again. Yeah, yeah, but we shared in your optimism. That's the point.
Yes, that. Like, there's a Mali tune that's close to me, and I think it's close to South Africa, where it says Rainbow Country.
Yes.
The children that has lived in the dark have seen the light.
Yeah.
And for us, that was supposed to be that moment now.
Because you kind of...
see the light, you know what I mean? Yes, like, for all of us, really, that... Oh, look, in the 90s, the ruling party, the ANC, they were banned before that. You know what I mean? They were the ANC, everyone knows the ANC.
The Nelson terrorists.
Mandela, yeah. Oliver Tambo, yes, Walter Sisulu, these were the heads of the movement. You know what I mean? They were banned along with the PAC. You know what I mean? Something started in Cape Flats, started in my community of Rocklands, Mitchell's Plain, something called the UDF.
Right.
The Democratic Front. You've heard about the UDF also. And its leader, Alan Pusak. You understand what I mean?
Oh, yes.
So coming into the 90s, with the ANC coming back now, you understand what I mean? The UDF was...
dismantled?
Right. Yes, okay. Because we thought that the heads are here almost now, things are going to run properly now. Yeah, you understand, okay. King? You don't need this now, because...
Yeah, see, we're being represented.
But that was a great unity.
Right.
Already that we had, like, very powerful, you understand? But now, because of, we had now Nelson Mandela, our leader, Oliver Tambo, our president. So that was it,
right.
You understand? So we as Rastas, we were promised by the ANC, they sent out pamphlets saying that our rights will be given to us. And beautiful pamphlets with the Right Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey on it, Bob Marley, with nice quotations about freedom and liberation and Rasta. But we as Rastafari people, we played a very important role in the liberation struggle of Africa. Yeah. You understand what I mean? On all levels. Some of us picked up the gun, some of us didn't. But we all of the same people. We are very peculiar people. And I found that here with us, you know what I mean? We have Rastafari people that were in the liberation struggle.
With
Umkhonto we Sesbe, Umkhonto we Sizwe. With the PAC's military wings, like militant people.
Right.
And at the same time, we had Rastafari, a peace man.
Right, yes.
You want to plant some corn, read the Bible.
We're not a monolith by any stretch of the imagination. We have the peace man, we have the security,
we have the
learned ones,
yes,
the holy order.
Everyone's
got their purpose.
Exactly.
You see, King, so there's all that also in the movement. But up till this far, Rastaman still feel it in South Africa. You know what I mean? We still feel it in South Africa. With the cannabis has been legal now. You know, we have made supplications to the government of South Africa back in the 90s.
Right.
For cannabis, for legalization. And with Rastafari people, we were saying, like, look, back in the 90s, we were like, yo, cannabis is a gift for South Africa and it's a gift for the reconstruction and development program, which was the manifesto back in the time. You understand what I mean? It could have driven that. We could have built houses with it. It's the same weed. It's not a different weed. This is what they're doing now. We could have done there. You know what I mean? We could have, like, I was just thinking in my little mind, in my little grade 7, 3 years in a row, I was thinking, like, why don't we make some cannabis bricks and you just burn it and the electricity, your energy is not like, you know what I mean? Just, we can figure something out, you understand? Yes, I am.
We're in the Roots Bar right now in Cape Town. Bookstore, Cape Town. Artworks.
Yeah.
Is this your first endeavor?
No, this is not our first endeavor. This has a root, yeah. Okay, the Roots Bar root goes back to Mitchell's Plain.
Right.
Okay, so going back to the 90s, Rastafari, Marcus Garvey. So we established a store in our community selling fresh fruit and vegetables.
Okay.
and marijuana, cannabis. You understand? Which was illegal at the time.
Okay.
But under our newly received constitution, which guaranteed us our right to our religion, to our conscience, and all these things. You understand?
Yes, sir.
We had it in our heart that that is the highest law of the land.
Mm.
And because the system is not up to that level of interpretation, do we put our lives on hold?
Mm. Well.
Or do we live?
Yeah. There it is.
So we, as indigenous people, so Cape Coloured people, like I say, we have a strong lineage connection to the Khoi people, Strandlwerper people. And cannabis is a part of our culture.
Right.
So we saw it as our economical right. You see, we have this big political party in South Africa called the Economic Freedom Fighters. So for us, that's real. We love that. That was us being economic freedom fighters.
Yes.
Within our roots, within our culture, within our conscience and our belief.
Is that Malema? Is that his party?
I think that is, Julius Malema's party, but using the EFF as that consciousness principles. And that mindset and principle of, you understand? So that is where the cannabis comes in. And at that point in time, we did make submissions to the constitution saying that this should be legalized for this and that, and we as the Rasta, and I told you the ANC had distributed certain pamphlets.
Yes.
So we actually started in Mitchell's Plain selling fruit and veg. And we kind of classify cannabis as fruit and veg. Vegetable matter, it's herbs, you got your thyme, you got your oregano, you got your basil.
Herbs,
isn't
it?
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Tell you.
Yeah, so basically that's within our consciousness of nature and creation and ital, you know, because a seed, water, sunshine.
Yes, sir. Fundamentals.
Fundamental. So from our said community setting up a store, the city of Cape Town decided to break down our store.
Really?
Yeah. They broke it down, we took them to court. We went to the Legal Resource Center, we took them to court. And we actually made a deal with them. With hindsight, maybe we shouldn't have made the deal.
Mm.
But we made the deal. They ended up paying us X thousands and we could set up our stall again.
Okay.
And with that deal we made, we kind of invested that into more works also. We started with arts and craft and things just grew and grew and grew.
Right.
We got the opportunity to go to the CBD. We took the opportunity and we established this business in Cape Town. We've been established here for 15 years.
Oh, wow.
15 years. And then prior we were in Cape Town.
Right.
The corner of Short Market and Long Street.
Okay. Mm.
Yeah, and there, like I say, we were called Roots Emporium. Why we call ourselves Emporium? Because we can cover all bases, you understand what I mean? Yeah. So we're dealing with reggae, we're dealing with Africa, we're dealing with education, so you can have a tape, you can have a book, you can have a t-shirt.
Cover a lot of ground.
You cover all ground, you understand? You could have a hemp wallet from Nepal, you could, it covers all grounds. You could have a bong from Amsterdam,
Quite an impressive collection of books as well that you can get. Because I've been setting up cameras and everything, I said, you know what, don't pick up any books, don't look at any books, you got cameras and lights to do.
Yeah.
But afterwards, I will be having a little.
Yeah, we've got a nice collection of different books, you know, no non-fiction, spirituality, religions, travel, conspiracy. David Icke has been with us here for like 12 years already, 13 years.
Covering all bases.
Yeah, all bases. Originally, we would just deal with Rastafari and Rastafari books. Originally.
Okay.
if we couldn't get originals, we would make copy to distribute and to spread the message. You know what I mean? Yeah, but since we came to the Roots Bar, we've opened up more.
Right.
Yeah. You know, like this painting is one of Cape Town's top artists.
What's his name?
Grant Oche.
Grant.
So maybe I would like you guys to link maybe his details, our details.
If anyone is interested
in getting some good art from South Africa, we can always link up. You know what I mean?
So all of this stuff is his work?
These are all Grant's works. Some of these, this is not Grant's work. This is a different artist. Right. That's Grant's work there.
Amazing.
Lots of the ones on top there's all Grant's work. Some of these were commissioned. He doesn't normally paint His Majesty.
Right.
You know, what he does is African portraits, but these were commissioned by me. I said, I'd like some Bob Marley painting. I'd like some Malcolm X painting.
Right.
I'd like a Martin Luther portrait. You know, so and just putting the word out there, you know, we could get the Empress, beautiful portrait. You check his work online, Grant Oche.
Right.
Grant Oche, Cape Town, South Africa.
Definitely on the itinerary. We're here for a while, so respect for that.
Yeah, man. I just work and pray, you know, to tell you the truth. Hey, like now.
Nothing else? Cooking, man. You bake?
I'm in the garden, my king.
Ah, okay.
I've got a garden on the side of the business.
Yeah.
Got my chili, I got my lemongrass, got my thyme, little bit of this, little bit of that. I'm planting also indigenous herbs as well.
Okay.
So I'm in the garden. When I'm by the kaya, there's in the garden, you know, this farming, and that's what we deal with, the garden. Because we're very blessed to be residing in Musicburg. The ocean is a stone throw away.
Right.
So we're walking on the ocean, on the beach, or the mountain is here, so we're walking up the mountain. You catch a nice sunrise,
right.
You know, yeah, Africa,
man.
King,
yeah,
you know,
Africa. It's a beautiful,
beautiful
thing.
You know,
man.
You know, I'm always excited when people say it's their first time, because I can kind of imagine the feeling they get when they see the mountain and the beauty, and it's like, wow.
You know, it's a bit like when you've got a favorite film.
Yeah.
But you watch it again, you kind of know how it goes. But somebody says, no, I've never seen that film. You said, oh, I envy you, because
like
you're going to get to experience it fresh.
Something like that, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, man, something like that, yeah. So, you know, like, you guys, you're out there, outer national. What I would say is Africa awaits king, you know what I mean? And Cape Town is the gateway to Africa.
Yes, sir.
There's lots of opportunity. Life is a bit different here. But there's opportunity for Aina brethren in the West, you know what I mean?
And this is the message that we're trying to do. Coming here, it's like saying to our brethren in the UK and Europe and things like, if you haven't come down here, it's time to really come and see what Africa has to offer and what you can offer Africa.
Ask not what you can do.
To paraphrase JFK.
Yes,
but what is this? Them ways. That, King. And what I would like to say is, like, this is the mother city. Everyone is coming to Cape Town. I see Ukrainians. I see Russians. I see French people. I see Canadian people, American people, all these people. Well, we just want to see the darker side of my people coming around also. And all these people are coming here taking advantage of what we have to offer.
Now, Bridget.
You know what I mean? My 1 pound carries lots of weight here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, by the time we finish, you know, by the time we go home, South Africa going to call us and say, we want
you
to head up our tourist board.
Yeah. Okay.
We want you to head up the tourist board.
Yes,
some work for you.
You know, so anytime the pound is hitting 20, we come invest
in
the land. Get your place up on the hill, you know what I say?
Yes,
yeah, man, Rastafari.
Judah, it's been an absolute pleasure spending time, and we're so happy just to just drop it on you.
For you to
be so
welcoming.
Open and generous and welcoming. It's a beautiful thing. Thank you so much for your time, my brother.
Yeah, man, I give thanks for the opportunity, King, for everything that is good, you know. Like I say, all glory to Jah.
Yes,
sir. You know what I mean? Rastafari. Oh, glory to Jah. You know, Dada Menelik speaks. I know if you listen, man.
Yes, right.
Yeah, you know.
Great dog with Menelik.
Yeah, oh, man, you see. Right. So it's one thing I know believe in. You have to respect your elder, them and those before you. Yes. His life is a relay, my
this
king.
This is what it is.
That's how we grow.
You know, yeah, man.
Well, thanks for sharing your experience and your fascinating life, my brother.
Bless
continued bless success and blessings for you, my king.
Respect.
Yes, Rastafari.
Rastafari.
This has been Garvey's Ghost in the Spectrum of Roots with Russ Judah, Eyes Red, and myself, Reality Soldier. Thank you to all the viewers and the listeners tuning in. Stay tuned for the next episode coming soon. Live from Cape Town, we out.
Check it.